What is happening? Welcome to another Pulse Pitch Podcast, morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is April 30th. It's going to be May tomorrow. Well, actually, it's going over the weekend. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Francis waving the white flag. I apologize to everyone who is French. I just could not resist that pun. And yeah, so long story short, 3 innings, 700 runs, 8 hits, 0 walks, and 1 strikeout. For Bowden Francis against the Red Sox. How am I supposed to butter my bread with this? I'm not saying that this is who he is. And if you guys have followed me and Bowden Francis since last year, I've been saying, look, Francis should not have had the success that he had. It didn't feel like it was real. He does have a good four-seamer. It's 7 feet of extension. It's like 18 inches of vert. It's not coming in hard. He's not really spotting it well. And he doesn't have the complements in his arsenal that you would think that would really squeeze out the most of that fastball's ability. The splitter maybe at times, and it does make the four-seamer a little tougher to hit with tunneling and all, but you need more. And this is a perfect example of where the four-seamer didn't get enough support. It wasn't his best four-seamer. He was tagged as kind of he should have a lot. Now, all the other starts have been 3 earned runs or fewer for Francis as far as the first major clunker. That said, I think you can consider Francis a Toby at this point. Maybe at best a hipster of a guy who could do well at certain times, and you don't really know should you be holding on to this or not in the sense of high upside versus really low floor. But this shouldn't surprise you too much. Jacob deGrom, ace is going to ace with a 38% CSW, that's a King Cole. 6 innings, 0 runs, 4 hits, 0 walks, and 7 Ks. You know, I remember going on the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast at the beginning of the year with Frank Stanfill, Scott White, and Chris Towers. I think this one was just without Scott. And I remember not really liking how I tackled the question about DeGrom with Chris. Chris was suggesting that maybe DeGrom is just saying that he's going to throw down to 97 because he can't go harder than that. And I really hand-waved it, and I don't like that I did that. And we hadn't actually seen DeGrom really showcase 98, 99 constantly. He's been sitting around 96 and change or so. And this was the first time they really saw him go over 97. 97.4. I really feel like DeGrom was kind of sick of how he was performing with his four-seamer in previous starts. Like that Rowdy Tellez home run. You know the one. Like, how does that happen? Come on, man. That doesn't happen to old DeGrom except if it's Jazz Chisholm hitting 100 above the zone. But that's different. That was 96. Tellez got him. And he's like, oh, I hate this. So he was 97.4. Much better four-seamers. It wasn't amazing against lefties. He destroyed right-handers. The slider is one of the best sliders in baseball, if not the best, honestly, as a right-hander. I know it's just like the combination of precision and stuff is just insane. But the four-seamers only well-spotted against right-handers. And lefties, he still has a little bit of trouble. So just something to be said about that with DeGrom. And yeah, he went, by the way, like 11 pitches per inning, like slightly underneath it. 65 pitches is all he did here. He could have gone 9 and gone like 12 strikeouts easily and just destroyed this. But why? Why push DeGrom when they had this easy win, right? So they didn't. Fine. Why they should have for our fantasy teams. That's really the correct answer. But you know what? You can't have everything in life. Okay. You have Shota Imanaga, unfortunately, going just 5 innings and 87 pitches because he left with leg cramps. Honestly, he didn't really need to go much more in this one, and we're all happy that that's why he left. He got the win in Pittsburgh. Only 3 strikeouts, but whatever. We just keep going. Bryce Miller also had an injury. He was dealing with lower back problems, and he's okay. I think it was just one of those days, and he's happy he got through it. 0 earned runs in 5 innings, got the win against the Angels. But that's why I was 5Ks, 2 hits, 6 strikeouts, and I just didn't assess the stuff here. Like, this is one of those that you should not get into the weeds about what he's doing, because he wasn't himself. And he's openly said he wasn't himself, and just let you move on. Now, here's Tanner Bibee, though. I've been waiting so long for this. There's a term I have that I haven't used a lot this year, which is tiara. Turn it around right away. And Bibee has had the tiara on. And it's the same also with Sandy Alcantara. It's, and we'll talk about him, of course, later as well. It's kind of like it is with Gavin Williams, but it's not because he had one game and then he didn't the next one. So I can't say that. But Tanner Bibee is a veteran who has been struggling, and we know he's better than this. So 7 innings, 1 earned run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 5 strikeouts against the Twins. Finally. The cutter was here. I've been waiting for this cutter. It's why I was in on Bybee in the preseason. It's because I saw a guy with high volume chance, with good strikeouts, with a reliable hero pitch. That is his cutter. And it just made sense. Like, fine, this should be good. I've been really down on Bybee in the past because he didn't have that out pitch, that reliable one. I thought the slider kind of was too inconsistent. The changeup was getting strikes, but it's like not well spotted. And in fact, really, Bybee only had his cutter killing it. 7 over 34 whiffs in this one. The changeup and curve were just not there. And the sinker wasn't really well thrown. It was just carelessly thrown into the zone. And right-handers saw a ton of them over the middle of the plate. But the cutter was just really good. And the fact that the cutter is there to save the day, finally, Bybee has that. I feel confident in that. And I imagine it will be there moving forward. 37% of the time. Thank you so much, Bybee. I hope you feel much better now, and hopefully you can get everything else in check. Because really, Bybee is himself with that cutter and the changeup. And without the changeup, it's a little behind still, but the cutter, you know, you got to start there. Michael Lorenzen against the Rays. He got you a quality start and a win. 6 innings, 1 run, 6 base runners, 4 Ks. He can do that. He can absolutely do that. Do you want to push your luck against the White Sox? Go ahead if you want. I'm just going to put him a questionable start because it's not much else. Like, it's just ratios, 4 Ks. You got the win, too. I should say that. You're not going to get strikeouts. It could be a grave mistake. That's a Kendall Graveman reference. It could be how am I supposed to butter my bread with this. It's kind of interesting. I went through all these different things of talking about getting low strikeouts and having good ratios. And it's really just how am I supposed to butter my bread with this. Anyway, you might get that from Lorenzen next time. David Peterson against the Snecks. That is the Diamondbacks. 5 innings, 1 run. Yes, a lot of these guys going 5 innings of production. 5 hits, 0 walks, 2 Ks. The slider and the changeup did not earn whiffs. They earned outs, which is fine. They were low. Cool. He still has a good extension. And the sinker above it got a lot of called strikes. We're fine. I really do want to see that changeup get a lot of whiffs. I would actually rather have the changeup get a ton of whiffs than the slider. Because the slider is good enough against left-handers. And especially with the sinker, that should be fine. Like, high extension sinkers against same-handed batters should always be good. So just get the changeup against opposite-handed batters. Please. Like, lefties are fine. Righties, you just make sure you have the changeup. That's all I want for Christmas. Okay, Chris Paddock against the Guardians. 5 innings, 1 run, 4 hits, 1 walk, 2 Ks. I wasn't kidding. He featured a 13% CSW overall with 4 whiffs and 76 pitches against the Guardians. Chris Paddock. What? Sub 12% CSW on the four-seamer, curve, and split change. That is just... What? How did you do this? Koufax, my gosh. But it was hard to hit. It was weak contact. Yeah, it wasn't terribly punished contact. Absolutely. But man, no. No, you can't get behind that. You have Tyler Gilbert opening for Bryce Wilson with 3.1 innings of 300 runs. Cool. Jack Dreyer opened for Matt Sawyer. Yeah, Jack Dreyer for the Dodgers. And Sawyer went 5 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 4 Ks, and got a win. He went 4 for 78 whiffs. This was to bridge the gap between Kasparius' Sunday game and then this one. Sorry, the next one. And then you have Tony Gonsolin also returning today. You should not be seeing Matt Sawyer. It's just a Sawyer patch in the season. Okay? They use the Sawyer patch. Okay. Sour patch. Matt Sawyer. Sour. Is it sour? I'm just going to hope it's sour. I should know this. I'm pretty sure it is sour. Taj Bradley against the Royals. 7 innings, 2 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 2 strikeouts. All these low strikeout performances. 42% strikes on the cutter for Bradley. And think about that. When I've talked about Taj Bradley entering the season and just in season, what do I like the most from him? It's when his cutter is killing it down in glove side. It wasn't at all. And then you have four seamers and cutters just kind of blah. A few whiffs here, just 6 on 101 pitches, but he got outs, and that's why he's going 7 innings, and that's efficiency. So there's a lot of times that you see pitchers weigh the two. That is, like, you only get whiffs, and if you get low whiffs, you can get 7 innings, but if you get strikeouts, you'll go, like, 5 innings, because it takes more pitches, generally, to get a strikeout. You need at least 3 for that, while an out can be as little or as few as 1. So sometimes you do see this. However, the best ones are the ones who just throw so many strikes that they don't rely on the early outs necessarily. to get through six or seven, right? That is your Logan Webb, your Michael King, your Zach Wheeler, your Sandy Alcantara when he's actually doing good things. We'll talk about him later. But that's why those guys are a mix of both. And if you don't have a good strike rate, if you're not really, if you don't have a good strike rate in general, that means that you need a game like this where you don't get whiffs and you just get balls in play that go your way in order to make it through seven. So I'm not a believer in this for Taj Bradley. Garrett Crochet, oh my gosh, there is something weird, and I don't want to be Chicken Little, but I feel like I need to be Chicken Little. He might be the best sell high you can make right now, and I hate that I'm saying this, and I'll explain why after this break. Garrett Crochet, I've said it a lot in this, and I fell in love with Garrett Crochet last year for a couple reasons. One, that he was throwing four-seamers for strikes constantly. Two, that he had this really nice cutter underneath it, so it was like 96 versus 92, maybe like 97 versus 92, 93. And he just threw tons of strikes with it. But three, the real reason is that he did so with over 7 feet of extension, 7.2. So when you throw hard and you have a lot of extension and then you have two fastballs that move dramatically different inside the zone constantly, that is just how you overwhelm consistently. And Garrett Crochet in Toronto yesterday was a win for 7 innings, 200 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, 6 Ks, 11 whiffs over 94 pitches. And you think to yourself, that's not really overwhelming. That's like a 12-13% swing strike rate overall. Why? Because he's at 6.5 to 6.6 feet of extension. And I don't understand why. I really don't get it. What is Garrett Crochet doing differently this year that just has him losing a foot almost, like 3/4 of a foot of extension? That is a huge deal. So I feel as if Garrett Crochet, I mean, he has to do more. He's doing more, which is cool, which is the sinkers there. And there's some more secondaries involved than you see as a sweeper for lefties, right? Like, okay, like he's still gonna be very good. But if you have Garrett Crochet in your team and you can get like a first, second rounder, third rounder or whatever, I mean, I would do that anyway, but you know what I mean? This might be the time to do it, because extension comes from a couple of things. One, it comes from your lower half and mechanically making sure that you can comfortably get out. But two, it often is a sign of injury of some kind, of some way of holding yourself back that you don't want to exert the same way that you did before. So I'm a little scared here about Garrett Crochet. I wonder if the Red Sox said, hey, we got to fix something in your mechanics to make you last longer. That means you're going to have less extension now. I don't know. I'm not saying that like Garrett Crochet is going to be bad or anything like that. He's clearly succeeding with this. Just, I had him as my SP2 entering the season because I expected that extension to be there. It's very rare to see this kind of extension change. And I don't now. I have him at 3 behind Skeens. If this continues, I'm just going to keep lowering him. I should have Zach Wheeler ahead. And honestly, Zach Wheeler, 6.2 innings, 200 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 7 Ks. I believe in this more. He has absurd success on his four-seamer because he does. He has one of the best in the game. And he also has improvements with his splitter and his cutter and his sweeper. And like everything is looking cool. It's really good. I'm a Zach Wheeler. Freddy Peralta against the White Sox. 6 innings, 200 runs, 3 hits, 3 walks, and 5 strikeouts. Professor Chaos was here because, my gosh, you could not just get that four-seamer upstairs. And his changeup and slider each had like a 35% strike rate. We're talking 35 and 33%. Oh, my gosh. How did you get through 6 innings? Oh, White Sox. Right. Of course. Duh. Man, I will always have this annoyance with Peralta. It's like him. It's Freddy Peralta, Dylan Cease, Blake Snell, Framber Valdez. You are the four horsemen of just cherry bomb nature of like, you don't know where it's going and you don't know what you're going to get. And you just have to hold on the entire season. And that's just how life is. Should I throw in like Robbie Ray kind of into that, I guess, at this point? I don't know. Maybe Ryan Pepiot. We'll see. Carlos Rodon, though, not one of them. 6 innings, 200 runs, 2 hits, 1 walk, and 7 strikeouts. He's having an amazing season, like a 3.43 ERA, sub-1 whip. Like just underneath it, with a 32% K rate. Woo! Man, he's got 4 wins in 7 games. That's amazing. You gotta love this with Carlos Rodon. Why is he? How is he doing this? Changeup. Changeup is still there. It's what we saw in the second half of last year. There was no reason for that to go away, and it's not. Adrian Smith-Shawver surprised us against the Rockies in Coors. Got the win. Rockies are not very good in Coors. They're just not. They're like historically a terrible lineup. 5.1 innings of 200 runs, 4 hits, 1 walk, and 5 strikeouts. He threw so many four-seamers and splitters right down the middle. I mean, I can't express this enough. It was just down the middle, these pitches, and the Rockies either just let it go or they got outs for the most part. It was just whatever. There's a lot to like from AJ Smith-Shawver on paper of having 7 feet of extension, a fair amount of vert around 17 inches worth, having a splitter that can be a put-away pitch. Sometimes he has a slider and a curve that look really nice too. It's at 94 though with the four-seamer. It's not the explosiveness of like 96, 97 as we've seen. So what I'm getting at is the last element for Smith-Shawver for me to really jump in, and really it's two things. It's one, I want to see, I mean, I would love to see the velocity be back, but I don't even need to see it. If he's just at 94, 95, that's fine. I'll take that. He just needs to actually locate it up. He needs to actually spot this pitch and not just kind of chuck it, right? The second thing is I don't want the splitter to be his number two. I want there to be some complement to that four-seamer. And as I often say, if you have good extension, what you want is actually, you don't need to develop the best slider or curve. If you have a bad feel for spin, that's fine. It should be a sinker then. It should be something else utilizing that tunneling of that extension to go in a different direction that looks like it. So I generally say cutter or sinker. I think those are the things that Smith-Shawver should develop over time. I think he will. It's something to note. Also, we don't know how long we're going to see of Smith-Shawver. I would hope that he sticks around because we also have Bryce Elder in the mix here. And between Strider and Renato Lopez, we should get a Smith-Shawver returning for another start against the Reds. I like the fact that he's getting more time. The problem I have is it's not polished yet. Exactly all the things I just talked about are still present, and that means I don't really want to go for this. I don't want to chase Smith-Shawver when he's doing, he's not really executing well, right? So this was an interesting moment. He also hosts the Reds, and you got to do against the Reds, I guess. But I'm still a little out on Smith-Shawver. After that start against the Reds, it would be against Pittsburgh. So you know what? Fine. Go get Smith-Shawver. Hope this all clicks for him. I mean, those are two phenomenal matchups. Ryan Gusto against the Tigers. I led with him last week. I added him to the list. And what I said was this. He has a 94-95 mile per hour four-seamer with a lot of vert, and he's very good at being precise at the top of the zone. But how are the other pitches? Well, here's the thing. We actually saw a lot of those other pitches because the four-seamer was really bad. 54% strikes and just 2 over 26 whiffs as he went 4.1 innings. Only 200 runs and 6 base runners and 6 Ks, and this could have been a lot worse. But, man, that four-seamer was just not consistent at all. Now, we did get some good curveballs to lefties, some sweepers to righties that were fine. The cutter had strikes, a lot of them. It were middle of the plate, and they had success. But I didn't really feel as if it was exceptional. But at the same time, if he is locating that four-seamer upstairs like that, that's fine. You can actually get away with that a decent amount. So Gusto is young, and we likely aren't going to see him anymore because we have Lance McCullers coming back later this week. And this was the stopgap with Arrigetti as well. We have Wisniewski still there, Valdez still there, Blanco still there, Brown still there. We have Blue Ball coming up today. And just so you guys know, if you're listening to this before rosters lock, we do not start MLB debuts. That goes for everybody. Chase Petty, AJ Blue Ball. We have some other guys I can't remember. We have Waddle we don't do today. And there's one other I can't remember. But you don't do it. You don't really want to go for these debuts. Remember that Paul Skeens, in his first start, was terrible against the Cubs. He had a really bad day. We don't want to go for MLB debuts. Oh, yeah, Noah Cameron is the other one. And I'm excited about Cameron, and I'm excited about Chase Petty. Not so much Blue Ball, but whatever. But they're not getting stretched out. Cameron's here because of Reagan's game pushed back until Sunday, so it's just a one-time thing, really. While Chase Petty's here just for the doubleheader. So we'll get a good look, and then we'll get the debut out of the way, and that's nice, and we just move on. You can stream it. It can work. It's just not one of those things you want to do. Mackenzie Gore against the Phillies, 6 innings, 3 earned runs, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 6 strikeouts. You got 21 whiffs for a gallows pole here against the Phillies, and that's fine. I mean, we'll take this with a sub-1 whip and those 6 strikeouts. Poor quality start, all good here. The sub-50% strike rate on the curve and the imprecise changeups are annoying, but when they work, things are great. He had 5 over 11 whiffs on the changeup, but that was pretty much the only strikes he got with it. And it did get struck really hard too. I should say there was like 5 whiffs and then one that was like, oh boy. But the good thing about Gore is that the volatility we saw last year hopefully is removed a little bit because of that new slider that he's throwing against lefties that saves a cutter for the righties. I hope this is a real tweak, maybe with the four-seamer command. I mean, we'll never see that command we saw in Gore's. My gosh, that was the coolest thing in the world from Gore. I still like him. Obviously, I think you should be rolling with him. He is a bit of a hipster, but it does seem like he's on the cherry bomb side now. And then I say this, and I remember last year he was having these starts, and I remember having him in the top 30 because he was just so good. And you don't know. It's not even May. It's going to be May tomorrow. But there's still time for this not to go right for Gore, and I'm not sold that he's completely fixed because the command is still iffy. You have Jack Ahanowitz against the Mariners in Seattle, which is annoying that it didn't go better. Oh, he was a stream pick of the day, and honestly, one fewer base runner would have gotten me a streaming win because it would have been a 117 whip, but this was a 133 whip with a poor quality start and 6 innings, 3 runs, 4 hits, 4 walks, and 6 strikeouts. Oh, so close. The command was mostly against lefties, and he just sat them sinkers middle away, and I'm like, oh man, you have better command than this. You can go down with it. You can go front hip with it. It went 39% CSW, which is cool on the sweeper. Sorry, the sweeper has a 39% CSW. That's nice. But I just wish there was more here. And now he gets, I believe, the Pirates. I feel like that's a questionable start again, too. It's just not quite the same Kahanowitz that we saw last year. He's exciting to me because he is a sinker-focused arm, and we just don't see that. And he has other things now. They're getting some whiffs. And he has 6 strikeouts. He used to be like a 2-3 strikeout guy. But yeah, he has to get back that one trade a little bit better. Reese Olson against the Astros, 5.2 innings of 300 runs, 4 hits, 3 walks, and 7 Ks. One out away from a Bailey special, which is 6 innings of 300 runs and 3 runs or fewer and like 7 base runners and a strikeout in an inning, right? 8 over 20 whiffs on the changeup as it went against right-handers. He barely faced left-handers. And I thought to myself thinking, okay, the slider really needs to wake up for this one. And the changeup won't be utilized so much. But yeah, that's so good. The changeup feel is impeccable at the moment for Olsen. It has been for like 3-4 starts now. And the slider had a 50% CSW. So what? What happened is that the sinker was thrown 44% of the time to righties. And honestly, it wasn't terrible. It just didn't work out the way he wanted to. He lost some batters for some walks. I just wish he would go inside with it more. He tries to go down and away with it, which can absolutely work, but then it leaks out over the plate sometimes, and it's annoying. It just wasn't as reliable as he wanted it to be to pair with that changeup and slider. So I just wish you could jam it inside, get those quicker outs sometimes, and it really would make a huge difference. But yeah, you should feel really good about Olsen right now. 18 whiffs, 37% CSW. Nick Pivetta had a careful Icarus. He looked so good for 5 innings. And then allowed 2 runs in the 6. So it's 5.1 innings of 300 runs, 5 hits, 1 walk, 9 strikeouts. He allowed 1. And then, of course, the reliever allowed the second one. 21.1 inches of vert on the 4-seamer right now is pretty dang cool. Pretty dang cool. Just got to say that. Yeah, we just keep going with Pivetta at the moment. Now, keep in mind, it was a home run, the one run that he did allow before the 6th. And he is a home run guy. Generally, you get home run suppression in San Diego early in the season and then not later on. So we could be seeing the tale of two halves with Pivetta. And we keep rolling it for now with it net for now. If you're looking to sell somebody high, maybe Pivetta is actually that guy. Jacob Lopez opened for the Athletics, I guess, for Hogan Harris after. But like, I mean, I guess I shouldn't say opened because it was 84 pitches. What am I saying? You don't want to touch this. 5 whiffs and 17% CSW. 90% four-seamer. He has 70 of extension, but this was like 54% of the time throwing it in like a slider underneath that slider at 79. He doesn't have compliments like a changeup or something that would really make it work. So you don't want to go with this. Andrew Heaney. Oh man, it was a Vargas rule, right? But you had the Cubs and it just didn't feel real. So I didn't do it. I imagine some of you just ran with it, and it was 4.2 innings of 4 runs, 5 hits, 3 walks, and 0 Ks. And the thing is, if Heaney actually was at the same quality of pitches that he had in previous games, like the Yankees, for example, I think this actually could have gone well. But he didn't, and... Oh my gosh, 0 strikeouts, 2 whiffs, 17% CSW, and 70 pitches. Yeah, this is Andrew Heaney. He has those moments where like he gets away with it a bit and he executes beautifully. But yeah, don't go with it. Logan Webb, oh man, you were so close to ace is going to ace. And 5 innings of 5 runs, 9 hits, 1 walk, and 6 Ks. If you honestly killed it here, I would have given it to you. But there you go. So it goes, and we move on. Everything is fine. Germán Márquez is not fine because it's Germán Márquez, but you know what? 5.1 innings of 7 runs, so it goes. That was not the highest earned run total of the night by 2. There was actually a tie with Sandy Alcantara against the Dodgers. What do you do? I mean, it was a horrible line. 2.2 innings of 7 runs, 5 walks, 7 hits, etc. Blah, blah, blah. Okay? He was down to 96. I mean, he labored. It was 79 pitches, 2.2 innings. So you're always going to see a velocity drop generally there, or sometimes you see a velocity increase if it's a guy who saves stuff in the tank and really unloads it. But generally, you see guys labor. This is what you expect to see, so I'm not going to talk much about the velocity. I'm just going to say that Alcantara is not in a good rhythm, and I can't tell you when it's going to come back. He has the tiara on right now. I hope he's just not hurt. What really worries me is that he's talked about recovering slower than expected before he went on paternity leave, and that generally is a sign that there's still something wrong. So I'm worried. I think... you don't start him against the Dodgers, and you really can't do much. If you want to drop him, you can, I guess. But, I mean, it might be the right thing to do. It honestly might be in retrospect. I'm not ruling that out. Personally, I'm just going to bench him against the Dodgers. And I'm going to expect there's an IL stint for like a week or a couple weeks or something like that. And then he's going to look really good, and he's going to get traded, and then you're going to really regret that drop in like the middle of June or something like that, like July 1st. So he should have an amazing second half. That's at least how I see it with Alcantara. So think of him like Blake Snell right now in the previous years. Okay, that's what I got. Eduardo Rodriguez against the Mets, 4 innings, 8 earned runs, 9 hits, 1 walk, and just 1 strike. And how am I supposed to butter my bread with this? A little disappointed because it was the Mets and it was such a pendulum swing from the success we've seen prior. But at the end of the day, like, he's neither of these. He's not an 8 earned run guy. He's not a 13 strikeout guy. Like, Eduardo Rodriguez is like a quality start guy. Okay, I mean, he's facing the Phillies and Dodgers next, so you know what? You don't need him. You can rage quit this. This is fine. We just move on. We'll get A-Rod later. We'll find E-Rod at home later, too, okay? That'll be like whoever you stream in the given week. Colin Ray is Eduardo Rodriguez at home. And then you have Kyle Gibson, who you forgot existed, and maybe you forgot that the Orioles signed him in spring training because of the Grayson Rodriguez news as like the savior. 3.2 innings and 9 earned runs. He allowed 4 home runs in the first 5 batters of the game against the Yankees. We saw Charlie Morton pitch in relief, right? Like, and also it was supposed to be Kay Povich today. They decided now to push him back until Thursday. It's supposed to be Kay Povich, on Tuesday. And they went with Kyle Gibson in this one instead. So now Kay Povich is going today. And why that's so annoying is because I was supposed to interview Kay Povich this morning at 9 a.m., but I didn't because they decided to go with Gibson. Come on. All right, so I'm going to talk to Kay Povich tomorrow live. I'm sorry, guys. You're going to get a bonus episode of The Craft this week after not getting one last week. I'll have that one out probably Friday morning. You can watch it live, though, on our YouTube channel at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, probably like 9:05. We'll get it going. Look forward to that one. But that's everyone from yesterday. Thank you all so much for your kind words. Really, I put out a thing on Reddit about really all the hate we've been getting. And really, honestly, across the industry, I've been seeing this so much of just people are feeling more and more comfortable to just call out analysts and creators across the industry. And it's wrong. Like, there's no reason to be rude and insulting and swear in our names when a player does poorly. We are not 100% correct. I say often we are in the business of being of good discussion and not being right, because you're going to not always be right, obviously. We're reading the same things you guys are, and if you disagree with us, great. I want to hear it. I want to know why you disagree. And as long as you have the understanding of my methodology, then then we should be on the same page. I would hope that if you disagree, there's something about my methodology that is wrong and you can identify that for me. But if it's things of just like, well, the results are bad, yeah, you know that that's not how I do things. So if you want to have a larger conversation about it, join my morning streams, 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. every single weekday morning. You know that I'm here and I'm going to engage with you guys about it. I love doing it. But I appreciate that, you know, I put out this message because it was just, I kept seeing all these things about calling me insane or just swearing at me or, you know, just because a pitcher doesn't do well for a start or two or something like that, then like, I'm the worst thing in the world and all this stuff. And it's just, you know, I got hate DMs. I would get like hate mail and stuff and everything. It's like, what is this? Why are we doing this? We're just talking about fantasy baseball, guys. And you know that I try as much as I can to be as transparent with every single thought that I have. And I don't expect everybody to listen to all of it because why would you? You should have other, you know, I want to hear your perspective too in a way to have a further conversation. That's the fun of this. Okay, that is it. So my name is Nick Pollock. May your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high. Good luck, everyone.